Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Chulin Daf Tzadi Aleph. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our home page. If you are already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the Daf before the Shiur, and even better, order your personal volume of this Maseches. Our address is gmarkings@gmail.com. Today, we begin our Shiur 7 lines from the top of Daf Tzadi Aleph. In fact, we are in the middle of a discussion that we started in our previous Shiur. We have been analyzing the Shita of Rebbe Yehuda that mentions that the Gid HaNoshe is found in the right leg. As far as the Torah prohibition is concerned, only the right leg is prohibited. We wanted to know, based on a source that we saw on Daf Tzadi, where it was said that Rebbe Yehuda holds that the Hadas, the Das tells us that it's the right. We wanted to know if it's a das of suffek, a point of view coming from a standpoint of doubt, that it's likely, maybe it's the right, it's likely that it's right, but it might be the left. Or when the Gemara says hadas machras, that it is the right side, it means das Torah, that it is definitely the right side. We started a series of markings, a series of house markings, point facing up and point facing down. With the point facing down, it will lead us in the direction that it must be that Rebbe Yehuda's position is one of certainty. And that brings us to the beginning of today's shiur, where we have an inverted house marking and a number 2 indicating that this is the second chance or the second attempt of the Gemara to prove one of the two sides. So here we go with the second attempt. Toshma, ochal mizeh kizayis umizeh kizayis soifeg shmoinim. If a person eats a kizayis of gid hanoshe from the right side and a kizayis, an olive quantity of gid hanoshe from the left leg, the first opinion says sofeg shmoinim. Sofeg means he gets the lashing penalty, 80, meaning two offenses have been committed. Rebbe Yehuda Omer eino sofeg elo arboim. Rebbe Yehuda says he gets one set of lashings, and the one set is going to be for the fact that he consumed a kezias quantity, an olive quantity of right gid hanoshe. Shapir, if you take the standpoint that Rabbi Huda's decision that it's the right leg is one of a definitive standpoint, that there's no doubt it's definitely the right leg, then this stance makes sense. Shapir means it's fine, it's good, it makes sense. We understand why there is a penalty of lashings. One would not give lashings unless he was definitely in violation. If, however, Rabbi Huda's opinion that it's the right leg, but it's an opinion stated from a standpoint of doubt, then what kind of warning would have been given to the person before committing the offense? It must be stated emphatically that a penalty, a court-imposed penalty like lashings, or of course the death penalty, cannot be imposed unless there is a warning issued to the offender immediately before the commission of the offense. And if you were to say that Rebbe Yehuda holds it's the right leg, but that's from a standpoint of doubt, then what is the nature of the warning that was given to the individual? Havio law, the Gemara says, it would have been hasra safek, a warning containing in it an element of doubt. In other words, before the person was going to eat the right leg gid hanoshe, one would have said to him, listen, don't eat that, it might be the one that you're chayavin. But by saying it might be, that's doubt. That's an expression of doubt. V'sham'inon lei l'Rabbi Yehuda, and we have heard Rabbi Yehuda's opinion to be, Yomar, hasra sofek lo yishmo hasra, that a hasra containing within it an element of doubt does not constitute a formal hasra, an official hasra, an official warning. D'sanya, and now to prove that, we will quote a source, a Tanaic source. This, by the way, is a sugya that we have learned earlier in this Masechta, and if many of you find it familiar, it's you're not imagining anything. This source is brought here to show us that Rabbi Yehuda holds Hasra Sufik is not considered a Hasra. And it involves the following. A woman who had been married to a gentleman and left him, let us say he died, and within 3 months of his death, prior to the lapse of 3 months, she married a second person. 7 months later, she bore a child. It is not clear to us whether this is a child as a result of a 7-month pregnancy with the second man, or in fact she had become pregnant already 2 months earlier with the first man and now is bearing a child after a real full-term 9-month pregnancy. This is all a result of her not having waited 3 months, a time period which would have enabled us to determine whether she in fact is already pregnant, and then we would know who the father really is. Now, this child grows up. We have to correct one point. We used an erroneous example where the first man died, but no, rather instead of that, the first man divorced her, and within 3 months, she married, let's say after 2 months, she married a second person and bore a child 7 months later. Now, the two potential fathers are around. This child, as it grows up, he then does the following, that which is described in the source. He hits each one of these men, the Sufik fathers. Is he chayev misas beisdin for hitting a parent? So the source says, hiko esze v'chazer v'hiko esze. If he hit Mr. 1 and then hit Mr. 2. Or kileil esze v'chazer v'kileil esze. Kileil has to do with cursing. That also carries with it a death penalty imposed by the court. If he cursed one and then cursed the other, he caused shneim bevasachas, o shekilel shneim bevasachas, or he hit both simultaneously, or cursed both simultaneously, chayov. He is guilty. In any of these cases, he would be guilty. Rabbi Yehuda Omer. Rabbi Yehuda makes a distinction. Bevasachas, if he hit the two men in one shot, in other words, with his right hand, he hit one and the left hand the other at the same time, he would be chayev, because in that one act, with a warning that precedes it, a singular warning that would have been a warning of certainty, namely, if I see someone like this standing in front of the two men, about to hit both of them at the same time, I would say, you are going to definitely be hitting your father. That's a hasras vadai. He would be chayev. However, bozeh achar zeh, in the case that he's hitting one of them after the other, in other words, not simultaneously, prior to each act of each strike, the warning that would be issued would by definition be, you might be hitting your real father. But once again, that's might. You might be hitting. And as a result of that, Rabbi Yehuda, you can see, he says here, bozeh achar zeh, poter, that he is exempt. And that's why we've dashed, underlined poter. This is the main proof from this source that Rabbi Yehuda holds, hasra safek, a hasra given from a standpoint of doubt, would not lead to guilt. Therefore, when we saw in the source above, with Rabbi Yehuda saying he would get 40 lashes for having eaten the Gid Hanoshe from the right leg, that shows us that the right leg Gid Hanoshe is a function of certainty with regard to Rabbi Yehuda, that it is certain that it's the right leg and not merely likely that it's the right leg. The Gemara now rejects our conclusion. And you'll notice that we have on the side of the Gemara, to the immediate left-hand side of the Gemara text, a Dalid that's encircled with a vertical descending dashed line, indicating that all of the following lines are designed to dismiss that which we just concluded. The Gemara says, Hai Tana, the Tana that we saw above, where Rabbi Yehuda says he will get 40 lashes for the eating of the right Gid Hanoshe, Sovar Lo Ki Idach Tana de Rabbi Yehuda. He holds like another version of Rabbi Yehuda, the Omar. That other version of Rabbi Yehuda says, Hasra Sofek Shmo Hasra, that a doubt given with an warning given with an element of doubt built into it, in fact constitutes a legitimate Hasra, the Sanya. We will now see a source. This too, we have learned in the past, is a source where the doubt that's given, the warning that's given, has an element of doubt built in. In this case, we'll be dealing with the element of time. This source describes the prohibition of leaving over meat from a korban, specifically the korban Pesach. The korban Pesach was eaten on the 14th of Nisan at night, the 14th following the 14th day, the 14th at night, meaning the technically speaking the 15th, which is what we call the Seder night. That's the time for the eating of the korban Pesach. If the meat was not eaten then and was left over till the daytime of the 15th, that meat became nosar, and as such it is burnt on the 16th of Nisan, as is the din regarding nosar. Nosar is to be burnt. What guilt does one carry by leaving over the meat? We will see in this source the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda, and we'll also see Rabbi Yankiv. But in our discussion, we want to emphasize Rabbi Yehuda because we're focusing right now on his approach to warnings. He will tell us in this source that the person who leaves over the meat is not going to be chayev malkos for one reason, and that is because in the Torah there is a positive command that follows the negative command. The positive command is that you shall burn that which was left over. Being that the Torah structure is first negative and then followed by positive, the Torah is telling us that this is a lav hanitak la'aseh, a lav that has been dismissed from the realm of lavim, which generally carry with them a punishment or penalty of lashings, as is characteristic of one who violates negative commands. And in this case, it's been taken out of that category, namely no lashings in this case, but rather fulfill the asay. The Torah expectation is for the offender, the one who left over the meat, to perform the asay, to burn the meat. Had there been no asay after this pasuk, after this offense of leaving over, then we can infer that there would have been lashings. But once again, think about it. When is this offense committed? Only with the passage of time. In other words, if I see someone shechting a korban Pesach and I say to be very careful, you better not leave over the meat. In other words, that's a lav. Do not leave over the meat. Is it for sure that he's going to be leaving over the meat? He can always say, hey, I've got time yet. I've got all night to eat the meat. So since the warning, the nature of the warning for the korban Pesach is a hasra, the warning, namely, don't leave over the meat, has an element of doubt built in. Will there really be an offense? The doubt being that maybe he will finish the meat by the morning anyway. We see from the inference we made here that had there been no positive command following it, you had just the negative, it would have led to Malkos. Even there was this element of doubt whether he would be in violation at all. And yet, it would have led to Malkus. Let's now see the source. As we said, Rabbi Yehuda, that was presented above with concerning the eating of the Gid Hanoshe of the right leg and being guilty 40 lashes, which is the punishment for having violated the lav, was in fact based on Rabbi Yehuda's doubt that maybe the right leg contained the prohibited gid hanoshe, maybe, and yet that situation carries with it a malchus penalty because of hasra safek being considered a hasra. The source here says desanya lo susim menu ad boker, and the continuation of the pasuk says that one who does leave over till the morning has to burn it. Bo hakosuv litein ase achar lo saase. The Torah in the section that continues from what's been stated here gives us a positive command that follows this negative command. Lomar, to tell us, to inform us, she'ein loikin olav, that there is no malchus penalty. And we have to speak out here. We have to say, had there been no positive command following the negative, there would have been malchus, even though the warning that would have been given contained within it the element of doubt and the passage of time. Maybe the person wasn't going to come to violate at all in the first place. Rabbi Yankiv Omer, this is to be de-emphasized as far as our sugi is concerned, he says, lo min hashem huzeh, that's not the reason for the exemption of malchus, namely the presence of the asay, the positive command. Elo, lo min hashem huzeh, that's not the reason. Elo, mishum de have lav she'ein bo maisa. The violation of the negative command in this case is through passivity. In other words, he simply lets the meat lay over and not eat it. The cholav she'ein bo maisa, any negative command that's violated, that whose violation is through non-action, ein lokin olav, it doesn't carry with it a penalty of lashing. That having been said, we continue in trying to see what is Rabbi Yehuda's opinion with regard to the right leg. Is it one out of, from a standpoint of doubt, namely it's likely the right leg but not for sure, or yes, it is for sure the right leg? The house marking that you see is once again inverted, indicating that we will be leading to the direction that it's a matter of certainty. The source says, Ochal shnei gidim mishnei rechois mishnei behemois, sofeg shmoinim. If one eats two gid hanoshes from two legs, from two separate animals, he will bear 80 lashings. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, eino sofeg elo arboyim. He will receive 40 lashings. From the fact that this source features eating two gid hanoshes from two separate animals, pshita de travayu liisura ulrabi Yehuda itzterich, that both of the gid hanoshes are forbidden, and the source is needed to be taught for shedding light on the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda. Before going on in the Gemara, let's glance at the Rashi. Mishtei behemos. Rashi right across from here says, Midenokat mishtei behemos. The example of two separate animals, Kihechi denevi trovayu yimonios nokat. It shows that so that we can speak about two right gid hanoshes, right side leg, right hind leg gid hanoshes. Di yaminu smoil, if the source was describing left and right, mali shtei behemos mali achas, then why cite the case of two animals when you could have had a right and left side gid hanosh from one animal? So we're focusing on two right gid hanoshes. Ula Rav Yehuda Itzterich, Rashi continues, the afagav de travayu di sura, even though both of them are forbidden, kopotale bechad malkos, he gets only one set of malchus according to Rabbi Yehuda. The taimo k'demeforish lekamei she'ein bein shneim elo kizayis, and the reason for Rabbi Yehuda's leniency here is that he gets only one set of malchus, is that there isn't a full quantity in each one of them. but rather, as the Gemara explains on another occasion, as we saw earlier, only in one of the two is there a kezias quantity. So Rashi continues and says, "Ve'ima safkale," if Rabbi Yehuda said right hand side from a standpoint of doubt, "Amai loki afilu chado," why should he get even one set of malkos? Dilma travayu dehetero, maybe both are totally allowed. Hoyol ushteim yamonios, since both are right side. By the way, this is in contrast with the Rabbi Yehuda that we saw in the previous source, or the example of the previous source, was a case, namely at the number two stage of the Gemara. There we saw he ate right side and left side, where we can say that between the two of them he definitely was in violation. Here he is not definitely in violation if you say that Rabbi Yehuda's comment of right side was made from a standpoint of doubt. But yet we see he gets lashings, he gets 40 malchus. So the Gemara here, back into the text, we say, Shma mino, mifshat pshit ole, shma mino, that Rabbi Yehuda's statement that the Gid HaNoshe prohibition is from eating the Gid HaNoshe of the right leg is a comment made from a position of certainty. The Gemara asks, V'i pshit ole, amai soifeg arboim v'sulo, lilki shmoinim, if it in fact is a standpoint of certainty, why in this case where he eats two right hand side Gid HaNoshes is he getting only 40 lashings, which is indicative of one violation and not 80, which would have reflected the fact that he violated it twice. Hocha b'mayaskin could go into less bo kizayas. We're talking about a case, as we mentioned before while learning the Rashi, that one of them doesn't have a kizayas quantity in it. Disanya och loy v'ein bo kizayas chayov. The Tanakama says, the first opinion in this Tanaic source says that if one eats Gid HaNoshe, even if it doesn't have a full kezias quantity of material, a full olive quantity of material there, he is guilty. Rabbi Yehuda Omer ad she bo kezias. Rabbi Yehuda says that there is no violation until there is a full olive quantity of Gid HaNoshe material that one is eating. So we see that Rabbi Yehuda makes the violation dependent on quantity. The Tanakama is really not the focus of our discussion, but he holds that a Gid HaNoshe, a complete Gid HaNoshe, even if it lacks a kezias in quantity, bears guilt with it because of its being a beria, or some refer to it as a bria, a complete entity. As we go on in the Gemara, you'll notice that we have a semicolon. The Gemara asks, V'taimo mai, why is it such? The question here is not going on Rabbi Yehuda's point of view that you need to have a kezias. That's why our marking here indicates a pause. That's the use of the semicolon, it's a type of pause. But rather, the question is focusing on why does Rabbi Yehuda feel that it is the right side. In other words, granted that Rabbi Yehuda holds that the offense of Gid HaNoshe is accomplished or is violated upon eating only one of the two, and his conclusion is it's the right one, but why is it the right side? Before continuing in the Gemara, we have a topic heading that accompanies this section of Gemara. In the outside margin, you'll notice we've written Nosei. Nosei is a topic, and we've noted a couple of points here. Hesber Machlokes Rabbi Yehuda v'Chachamim. We will be explaining the machlokes Rabbi Yehuda v'Chachamim. Im Gid HaNoshe rak beyerech yamin o b'shneim. Is it only on the right leg or on both? In other words, we've stated their positions. Now we're going to give a little more background to their positions. And another point that we'll deal with: Tiur hamaavak bein Yaakov v'Saro shel Esav. The Gemara will be describing the contest, the fight, the struggle between Yaakov Avinu, our patriarch Yaakov, as is featured in the Sefer Bereishis, in the Book of Bereishis, and the Saro shel Esav, the angel or the ministering angel who represents Esav. In the course of that struggle, in the Chumash story, we find that this Soro Shel Esav, this Malach, injures Yaakov Avinu's leg, causing him to be lame for a period of time. And following that story, the Torah says that as a result of that incident, Yisrael shall not eat the Gid Hanoshe. The Gemara. V'taimo mai. Why is it obvious to Rabbi Yehuda that it's the right leg? Omar Rava, Omar Kro. The Pasuk says, Hayerech. And the presence of the hay in that word indicates hamiyumenes she bierech, the right one. Miyumenes often meaning the stronger one, the main one. And when confronted with right versus left, the right side, generally speaking, is the strong one or the main one. Rabbonon, the Rabbonon who hold that Gid Hanoshe applies to both, what do they do with the hay in this pasuk? Hahu, they say, they learn from this pasuk that the Gid Hanoshe that the Torah is trying to identify as being prohibited is deposhet isurei bekule yerech. It is the gid, the nerve, whose material or whose presence spreads throughout the entire thigh. Lafuke chitzon delo, to the exclusion of the nerve that appears on the outer side of the leg, which doesn't run throughout the entire yerech, the entire thigh. It's rather the inner one, but it's found on both legs. The one, the nerve that faces the inner side of the leg is the one that is usser. That is learned from the ha yerech, the inner one, as opposed to the outer one. And as we said before, the hay indicates something of centrality or main. It's here by the fact that it spreads throughout the entire thigh, and that gives its focus, and hence the hay referring to it. For Yeshua ben Levi Omar, he takes a different approach as to how Rabbi Huda knows it's the right leg that contains the Gid Hanoshe. As far as, of course, Rabbi Huda is concerned, Omar Kro Behelv Koi Imoi. The struggle with the angel, the Torah, in describing it, uses this term, Behelv Ko Imo. And he sees in this expression ka'adam shechovek es chavero v'yodo magas l'kaf yamino shel chavero. If one has access to the book that we have been recommending throughout this masechet, throughout Masechet Chulin, we've been recommending using the book of illustrations Sichas Chulin, one will see an illustration that shows what's being described here. So if we'll try in words to describe this based on what Rashi says, in a type of struggle between two people, so they will let's say grab one another, each one facing the other in a type of maybe a hug type form. However, we're not dealing here with a hug done out of love. It's a fight. And the one's right hand, when it reaches over toward the back of his opponent, it reaches over and across, and will, if he's reaching down to his leg, he'll end up reaching his opponent's right leg. In other words, when you have two people facing each other, one's right side is immediately facing the opponent's left side. However, when you reach over and around your opponent, in order, in this case, to squeeze, to put pressure on the leg, you'll be reaching the right leg. So that is what happened, and that's what's described by the expression Behelv Ko Imoi. Rav Shmuel bar Nachmeni Omar Ke'evei Kechovim Nidmeloi. Rav Shmuel holds that the appearance that the Malach made to Yankev Avinu was like one of a Gentile. He appeared in a human form, like as if he were a Gentile. And what does this have? What bearing does this have for us? The Omar Mor, we have a teaching. Yisrael shenit palo yovik yuchovim baderech. If a Jew encounters an idol worshipper on the road, and there's always a fear that this idol worshipper poses a threat to the Jew, the advice is toiflo liamino. Let's read that line again. Yisrael shenit palo yovik yuchovim baderech. Toifloi liyamino. The Jew is supposed to position the goy, the idol worshipper, to his right side, to the Jew's right side, so that the Jew's right hand will be closest to his new company. And if the idol worshipper tries to make a move, so your right hand will be closest to him to stop him. Now, as a result of that, when it came to the angel. So the angel was closest to Yankev Avinu's right side, so that when he made his attack move, he in fact attacked Yankev Avinu's right leg. Rav Shmuel bar Acha kamei derav Popa mishmei derava bar Ula Omar. This is a second description of what the angel appeared to, as far as Yankev is concerned. And that's why we've labeled these opinions, by the way, of Rav Shmuel bar Nachmeni, we've labeled as Aleph, and this Rav Shmuel bar Acha, we have labeled as Beis. He says, Ketamut Chochom Nidme Lo. And you can see with our markings how you can see easily how the first opinion held Kevin Kichovim Nidme Lo, and here we have also, with the special underlining, we've indicated he appeared as a Talmud Chochom. In other words, Yankov saw the angel to be a Talmudic scholar. The Omamar, and we have a teaching that addresses this scenario as well, Hamalech liyamin rabo hareze bur. If one walks, accompanies his rab, his rabbi, his teacher, and he walks to the teacher's right side, that's an indication that the student is an ignoramus. Therefore, the proper behavior, the proper decorum is that one walks to the left-hand side of the teacher. Now, if you imagine this scene, so the angel, representing in this case the Talmud Chacham, the Torah sage, and Yankev Avinu was showing honor to him, so Yankev Avinu walked to the angel's left side. So which side of Yankev Avinu was closest to the angel? In fact, it was Yankov Avinu's right-hand side was closest to the angel as they were walking along. We just mentioned that Yankov made sure that he would position himself to the left-hand side of the angel, thereby making the right side of Yankov closest to the angel. And hence, that's the side that, in fact, was attacked. Virabonan. The Rabbanon who disagree with Rabbi Yehuda hold that both legs are forbidden with regard to the Gid Hanoshe, and we know from the story, and we know that it's a result of the attack of the angel on Yankov that this Isser set in. So how do the Rabbanon explain their position in light of what we've said? So the Gemara goes on and says, "Rabbanon, me'achorei also v'nashe b'travayu." The angel attacked Yankov Avinu from behind. So the angel's two hands, so to speak, were free to attack both legs of Yankov as he approached Yankov from behind. The Gemara asks, well, okay, V'rabbonon now, hai behev koimo mai darshibe, what do the Rabbonon do with the expression that we saw earlier, from which Rabbi Yehuda, according to Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, derived his opinion? We saw this expression above, and in order to find it easily, we've provided a little arrow to the immediate left-hand side of the Gemara text. we saw above, Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi citing this pasuk and using it as a proof that it was the right leg, as a description of two people clasping one another in a struggle. As far as the Rabbanon are concerned, what do they do with that expression? Let's just go over the previous opinion was that as a result of clasping one another, so the attacker's right arm would reach over and reach over to the back of his opponent's right leg. What do the Rabbanon do with that when their shita, in fact, their opinion is both legs were attacked? So they explain that pasuk differently. And interestingly, they cite the same Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi based on a different quotation of his. Miboya lei lichin idoch Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi. They need the pasuk ve'evko imo for a different teaching or another teaching of Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi. Domar Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi melameid. This pasuk teaches us she'olo she'elu avak margaloisam ad kisei kovod. The word he'evko, instead of referring to chovek, clasping, rather from the word avak meaning dust, that as their struggle continued, in their struggle dust was kicked up. And it rose till the heavenly throne. Ksiv hocha be'avko imo. You see this posuk in the context of the struggle. Uksiv hosam, and in Nochum, in the prophet Nochum, found in the Treyasar, the posuk says v'anan avak raglov. So we see the term avak in a prophetic context, showing us that Behelfko could in fact refer to the dust reaching heavenly proportions. The Omer Bishov ben Levi, Lomo Nikro Shmoi Gin Hanoshe. Why is the this particular nerve called by the term Gid Hanoshe, emphasis on the term Noshe? That's, of course, in our markings, why we've dashed underlined the word hanoshe. Answer: shenosha mimakoimoi. It jumped out of its place. Noshe has to do with a movement, so that in the struggle, this gid moved out of place. The olah and rose. In other words, it moved and was pushed up out of place. The chain hu omer nosh sa gvrosim hoyu lenoshim, and you see the term of noshe being used in this pasuk as well in the context of something moved out of place. This pasuk says that their galor, their strength, gvrosim, their strength nosh sa moved out of place, and hence their strength left, and they became weak as women. So physically speaking, of the two genders, the female is considered the physically weaker of the two genders. And once again, nosha ruha gvurasam, their gvura moved out of place. Their strength was removed. Amar Rabbi Yisubet Rabbi Chanina, my dechtiv davar shalach b'Yankov v'nofal b'Yisrael. What are we to learn from this pasuk? Davar shalach b'Yankov zegid hanoshe. V'nofal b'Yisrael sheposhat isuro b'chol Yisrael. The pasuk is describing something that happened to Yaakov, and that's a reference to the Gid Hanoshe incident, his own leg nerve being moved out of place, and that resulted in an isser, in a prohibition that spread throughout all of Israel. In other words, the Jewish people observe this as a prohibition. The Omar Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Chanina. We have another comment of his. And you can see with our markings, when you see multiple comments made by the same opinion, we use a similar geometric form around each one of them. Here we've used a crown marking around Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Chanina. Prior to this, we used a volcano form around the multiple comments of Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi. So here, Rabbi Yossi ben Levi says, "My dichtiv v'tavach tavach v'hachein." The emphasis in this particular drasha is not on the word v'hochein. In fact, some girsos don't even have this word v'hochein over here, and that's because it will be explained a little bit later on the line, on this line of Gemara. So as a result of that, we've placed a brackets around the word v'hochein, because we want to focus right now on the expression of the tavoach tavach. This pasuk appears in the context of Yosef and his meeting with his brothers, where he served them a meat meal. So the pasuk says, "Para lohen beis hashchita." He exposed the neck organs of the animal that was slaughtered, so they can see that he was serving them ritually slaughtered meat, you know, Torah slaughtered meat, as opposed to simple killing of the mother, which of the animal, which we call basar nechira. The pasuk says, "V'hochein," which is tul gid hanoshe bifnehem, means he removed the gid hanoshe in their presence. Now, the fact that Yaakov Avinu troubled himself to that Yosef HaTzadik troubled himself to remove the gid hanoshe, keman de'omar, this reflects the opinion that says gid hanoshe ne'esar livnei Noach. This actually is a Gemara that we have seen before in the sugya of Isur Chalal Isur, where we saw the question concerning can a second prohibition attach itself to something that's already prohibited. We cited that there is an approach that this is an Isur Chomor, that Gid Hanoshe is a particularly stringent prohibition in the sense that it applies to humanity, not just to the Jews. And this is being reflected over here, that Yosef, who we're talking about a point in time that's before the giving of the Torah, so they had a legal status known as Bnei Noach, the descendants of Noach, who, and amongst their mitzvahs, their requirements, their mitzvahs, includes the Gid Hanoshe. So Yosef was cognizant of this prohibition, and hence remove the Gid Hanoshe in the presence of his brothers, showing them that they can eat this meat, the Gid Hanoshe having been removed. Vayivoser Yankiv Levado. The Posuk says that prior to the meeting with the angel, Yankiv was alone. In other words, he was coming with his entire extended family, and he was walking toward Eretz Yisrael with his extended family, and then you see that he is alone. Why is he alone? Omar Rav Elazar, Shimishtayer al Pachim Ktanim. He sent his entire family with all of their possessions ahead, but they had apparently at a certain point in their journey left some small vessels and continued on their journey. He went back to he remained behind after sending them ahead to gather up these small vessels, pachim ketanim. So you'll ask, of what significance are these small vessels? Couldn't they be done without them and just continued with everybody else? Mikan, from here we learn, l'tzadikim shechoviv aleim omoinim yoyser migufan. When it comes to the righteous, their possessions are of greater importance than their own physical well-being. In other words, by being alone, and we know from the context he was alone at night, that posed a certain element of danger to the person. And yet he was preoccupied with gathering these small vessels. That shows us that his concern for his possessions was greater than his concern for his own physical well-being. The kol kach loma. Why is that? Why would someone place a greater premium on his possessions more than his physical well-being? Answer: lefi she'ein poishtin yedein begezel. This is this shows us how concerned, or we'll say fearful, they were of ever being in a position of being tempted to engage in thievery. And in other words, a person knows that he has a certain amount of financial welfare or financial wherewithal. And as long as he is managing, so he's able to pay off his needs with that which he has, and isn't tempted into acquiring funds and possessions in an illegal fashion. He already has what he needs. When a person reaches a point that he doesn't have enough, that obviously can tempt a person into acquiring necessary funds through illegal means. As a result of this concern, a person should be very careful with that which he has, because one doesn't necessarily know what life brings. And so as to stay far away from temptation, take care of that which you have, even if they appear to be of minor importance. We should just mention from another vantage point, we are not saying here by any means that a person should pursue money and finances and put himself at risk in the pursuit of new funds. All we're saying is that which you currently have, you should take care of. But to go all out to amass riches because you don't know what the next day is going to bring, that's already a different story. The pasuk says, "Vayavek ish imoy ad alois hashachar." And before we go on in the Gemara, we have a nosei mivne heading. We have a double underline that accompanies the upcoming Gemara. These are the double underline is a series marking, and in this case, they are makoros. These are, represent sources. She'ein l'talmud chacham lotzeis yichidi balayla. That in general, a talmud chacham should not be outdoors at night. The Gemara, Omar Rabbi Yitzchak, Mikan l'tamud chacham shelo yetzi yechidi balayla. From the fact that Yaakov Avinu was out at night and he he was by himself alone at night and got hurt, we learn from this that a talmud chacham should not be out at night alone. It's dangerous. There's a little Tosfos at the last Tosfos on the page. Mikan l'talmud chacham shelo yetzi yichidi balayla. Omer Rabbeinu Tam, didavko noka talmud chacham. This restriction of alone at night is focused on talmud chacham. It's limited, you can say, to talmud chacham. Mishum demazikin miskanin bohem. Mazikin are threatening forces or dangerous forces. These forces are jealous of Talmidei Chachamim and are out to get them, so to speak. The Tosfos also points out that based on a Gemara in Psochim, it seems that the issue of being out at night is not limited to Talmidei Chachamim. So why here are we saying that this is limited to a Talmud Chacham? So the Tosfos answers that there is a distinction made. If one is far away from a city, that then applies to everybody. With regard to a Talmud Chacham, even in a city, there is this concern that he should not be out alone. And the idea of restriction to within a city, this is something that applies to a Talmud Chacham and not to everybody. Continuing in the Gemara, Rabbi Abba Bar Kahana, you can see this is another opinion, Omar Mehocha. From the following, we are learning that a Talmud Chacham should not be out at night alone. The Pasuk says, that here we're at the top of Omid Beis, Hine hu zora es gurin hasaurim. Rashi explains and gives a little background. This is the story involving Ruth and Boaz, where Naomi tells Ruth that you're going to find him at the granary tonight. In other words, he was involved with processing his grains after the harvest, and he was doing that during the day, all day. And Naomi tells Ruth that you should know he's not going to be going home because of this point, that it's a gnai for Talmud Chacham to be out at night. And therefore, he will be spending the night at the goren, at the granary. Rabbi Avohu Omar Mehocha. From the following, we learn this idea. Vayashkem Avram Baboker, Vayachvoish Es Vuchulei. It says in this pasuk that Avram got up specifically at the break of day and not beforehand. The Gemara goes on. Rabbanan Amri Mehocha. Lechno Re'eh Es Shlom Achecha Ves Shlom Vuchulei. Yankov Avinu told Yosef in this pasuk, go and see how your brothers are faring and how their animals are doing. And the Rashi explains that Yaakov Avinu was instructing Yosef to go at a time when you can see, namely by day, when there's daylight. Rav Omar Mehocha, Vayizrach Loi Hashemesh. This pasuk is found after the struggle with Yaakov and the Malach. It says that the sun then shone upon him, indicating daytime. Omar Rabbi Yaakov, Omar Rabbi Akiva, and we should point out before going on, we have a general topic heading on the outside margin. We call it the Nosei Kloli. And we call it here Ma'avak Yankov im Hamaloch, the struggle of Yankov with the Malach, sorrow shel Esav. And the immediate topic heading, the Nosei, Pirush HaPosuk, Eitzel Yankov Avinu, we're going to spend time looking into the Posuk that appears, that we just read, Vayizrach Loi HaShemesh. This pasuk shekosav achrei hevko im hamalach, that's written after the struggle with the angel. The pasuk in full, as appears on the side, on the inside margin of our Gemara, Bereishis perek lamed beis pasuk lamed beis, it says vayizrach loi hashemesh kasher avar es penuel v'utzolea al yirecho. This pasuk says the sun began to shine, and as he passed Penuel, name of a place, and he was limping. The next pasuk Lamed Gimel says, "Al kein lo yochlu bnei Yisrael is gid hanoshe." As a result of this, the Jews shall not eat the gid hanoshe. We now turn to the Gemara. Omar Rav Akiva, Sha'alti es Rabbi Gamliel ves Rabbi Yeshua, Be'itliz shel imum. I, says Rabbi Akiva, I asked Rabbi Gamliel and Rabbi Yeshua in the butchery, there was a butcher shop of imum, name of a place, Shalchu likach behemo lemishta benoi shel Rabbi Gamliel. They went to this itliz, the butcher shop, in order to buy meat for the wedding of Rabban Gamliel's son. Ksiv vayizrach lo hashemesh. That's what it says in this pasuk. The sun shined for him. Well, v'chi shemesh loy levad zorcha. Did the sun shine for him alone? V'alo l'chol olam zorcha. When the sun shines, it shines for everybody. Omar Rabbi Yitzchok. The Gemara now gives an answer, and it's a long answer. You can see we have a long answer marking indicated by the tuf to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara text with a descending vertical dashed line. All of the lines opposite this vertical descending dashed line form the answer. Omar Rabbi Yitzchok, Shemesh habo ba'avuroi, zorcho ba'avuro. There was an incident that the Gemara will reveal momentarily, where the sun set for Yaakov Avinu. Let's say a premature sun setting, and this premature sun setting was for Yaakov. So to compensate for the lost daylight hours, we now have a sunrise, a premature sunrise for him as a result of of Yankov, the sun shines. As we said, to make up for the lost daytime hours, so to speak. Dichtiv. And now the Gemara gives the background for the sun setting early. Vayetze Yankov mi Be'er Sheva vayelech Chonono. Yankov was in departure from Eretz Israel toward Choron. Uksiv vayifga b'makom, and it says he reached the place. Kimota l'Choron, when he reached Choron, Omar, he then said to himself, Evsho avarti al mokom shispalu avoisai vani lo hispalalti. Could it be that I passed the place that my forefathers, Avram and Yitzchak, had davened to the Kodesh Baruch Hu, to the Almighty, and I didn't do the same? Kad yohiv daite l'mahader, as soon as he had in mind to go back to that special site that his forefathers happened to have davened in, and we're referring to what eventually became the Beis HaMikdash, we'll call the holy site, the Temple Mount, in what would eventually be labeled Yerushalayim. So when he thought about this and decided to go back, Koftsa Le Ara, the land, so to speak, condensed itself. Literally, kofsel out of the land jumped, but it means it like jumped together and shortened itself. We can say the two points between where he was standing in Choron and the point of Yerushalayim, the site upon which the Beis HaMikdash would be built, those two points came together, so that in your mind's eye, the entire distance between Choron and Yerushalayim, that whole landmass, we'll say, folded in, and thereby drawing the two points together. Miyad, it says, Vayifga b'makom. This was cited before, and he met up with the place. He reached Choron, and then you find him immediately back in Yerushalayim. And that's a function of what was just described of Koftsa Le'ara. Kad Tzoli, as he finished davening, boy the Mahadir, he wanted to go back to Choron. Omar HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so the Almighty said, Tzadik ze bo lebeis malonai v'yiftar v'lolino, should this righteous one, Yankov Avinu, reach my residence, my Beis Maloni, literally my inn, the place of my residing, and we're once again referring to the Beis HaMikdash, the future site of the Beis HaMikdash, the Yiftar Belolino, and he should go without spending the night by me, Miyad Bo HaShemesh. We've dashed underline that because this is the whole point that we were leading up to as a result of the Kodesh Baruch Hu's desire to have Yankov spend the night there at his place, in order to deter Yankov from going back, he caused darkness to fall immediately, prematurely. So at that point, then there was a number of lost daylight hours. Those daylight hours were made up later when we see the pasuk Vayizrach Lo Hashemesh. After his struggle with the angel. It's also interesting to note parenthetically that there is a halacha that when one brings a korban to the Beis HaMikdash, that he is not supposed to go back immediately. We find this in the context of korbanos that one brings on the holiday period. During the Aliyas HaRegel, he brings his korban and then spends the night in Yerushalayim. That's called a chiyuv lino. As we continue in the Gemara, we have another topic heading on the outside margin. In this case, we've cited a number of points that the Gemara will deal with in the ensuing lines. And we have written the following under the Nosei heading: Hesber Hapsukim Shenirim Soisrim Bekesher Lavonim Shesom Yankov Mitachas LeRosho. We will attempt to, we will show the Gemara's resolution of psukim that appear to be contradictory in the context of the stones that Yankov used as a pillow when he spent the night, as we just described in the Gemara, at the Mokum HaMikdash. Another point will be Tiur HaMalochim She'olu V'yordu Al HaSulam Shor Yankov B'Chalomo. The Gemara here discusses the famous dream of Yankov Avinu involving a ladder with angels rising and descending, and we will describe an aspect of these angels. Another point that will be coming up in the Gemara is Diyukno Shel Yankov Chokuk Al Kisei Kovid V'Kinas HaMalochim. The form of Yankov, the image of Yankov, is said to be etched out on the etched out in the heavens above, possibly on the heavenly throne. And upon seeing his face, the angels were consumed with a sense of jealousy. That here you have this human being whose face is represented up in the heavens. Another point, Simen Shihei Haaretz Neuche Lichbosh. The Gemara will tell us about a sign that was given showing that the land will be easily conquered in the future. And finally, in our heading at this point, we are noting Higia Zmano Shel HaMaloch Lomar Shira, the arrival of the time of the angel to say his heavenly praise, namely that when discussing angels, one should realize that they have a very specific role to perform, and that's to recite Shira, to sing praise or song to the Almighty, and that has a very specific time to it. Let us now continue in the Gemara. Ksiv Vayikach Me'avnei Hamokoyim. One pasuk says he took from the stones of the place, stones in the plural. Uksiv vayikach es ha'even, and he took the stone, the word stone in the singular. How do you resolve this? Amar Rav Yitzchok Melamed shenizkatzu kol oisin avonim lemokom echad. It shows us that the stones that Yankov had taken all gathered to one spot, v'chol achas v'achas omeres, each stone was saying, so to speak, alai yoniach tzadik zeh rosho, on me the tzadik Yankov Avinu will place his head. So we have this contest between all of these stones, tana, and we have a teaching that says v'kulon nivlu v'echad, that all of them actually fused into a singular stone. Vayachloim v'nei sulam mutzav arza. He dreamed, and there was a ladder positioned with its base on the ground. Tana. And there is a teaching. Kama rochboi shel sulam. How wide was this ladder? How wide was it? Shmoinis alofim parsos. It was 8,000 parso wide. Parso is a distance measure. It actually is understood to be one parsa has 4 mil, and a mil is 2,000 amos, which corresponds roughly to a kilometer. So if it had 8,000, if there are 4 mil in one parsa, and you see 8,000 parsa, that would be 8,000 times 4, which would give you 32,000 kilometers wide. These, of course, are numbers that are meant to convey a certain idea, a certain feeling and idea. And this is the width of the ladder that he saw in his dream. And how do we come to this number? Dichtiv. The pasuk says, Vinei maloche elokim oilim viyordim bo. This is the pasuk in the dream where it says angels in the plural were olim, were rising, and yordim, descending. The word olim is in the plural, so olim equals shnayim. Viordim equals shnayim. So at minimally, there were two angels going up and two angels descending. V'chipogu b'hadi adodi, when these two groups of two met each other, one on their way up and one on their way down, at the point of meeting, havalu arba, so there were four across. Uksiv bei b'malach, and it says regarding a malach, ugviyaso ketarshish. That's a pasuk in Sefer Daniel, describing the body of the malach is like Tarshish. Tarshish is the name of a place. Ugmiri, the Tarshish tre alfi parsi havu. And we have a tradition that Tarshish, this place, measured 2,000 parsa. So if you have one malach, 2,000 parsa, four of them meeting up with one another at the same point would result in a distance from end to end of 8,000 parsa. Hence, we described above the width of the ladder being 8,000 parsa. Tana, we have a teaching that says, Oylim umistaklin b'dyukna shomalo. The angels would go up and notice an image above. V'yordin umistaklin b'dyukna shomato. And they, when they came down, they noticed that same image on the ground, on the earth. In other words, there was this realization that the image that appears in the heavens is that of this very man. And this is a phenomenal idea, that you have a human being, and we tend to describe human beings with all of their foibles as being full of all kinds of lacking and desires and everything else that one would describe a person as having, and yet in the lofty heights of the heavens, which is a place of total purity and refinement, you have this image of the same person. How could it be? This caused a sense of jealousy, if you will, or amazement on the part of the angels. Bo'u liskune, and that resulted in Yaakov Avinu being endangered. Miyad, it says immediately, Vine Hashem nitzav alav. And it was after the description of the angels rising and ascending, and we just explained that this resulted in them in their becoming aware that this man is in fact represented in the heavens, and we said that was responsible for Yaakov being in a situation of danger. The pasuk says, "And the Almighty appears above, nitzav alav, standing above." Amar Rav Shimon ben Lakish, il mole mikro kosov. If not for the fact that we have this pasuk written, ef shel omro, it would be a type of thing that one couldn't say. And what is this amazing thing? Ka'odam shemenif albino. What's being described here is like a person or a father fanning his son. In other words, trying to protect him from the heat. So kivyachol, is if to say, the Almighty Himself stood in protection of Yaakov Avinu, and protecting him from the heat, so to speak, or the jealousy of the angels. The pasuk says, "Ha'aretz asher ata shechev aleha v'chule." In this dream, Yaakov Avinu is told that the land that you are sleeping upon will be given to your children. In other words, he will inherit, his children will inherit this land. So the Gemara asks, "My Rabuse, what's the big deal? How much land does a person take up when he sleeps on the land? Let us say he takes up four amos. He takes up, four amos. Was it what? If you say it's like around 6 feet, so what's the big deal that a person's children are going to get 6 feet of land?" Omer of Yitzhak, Melamed. This teaches us, Shekiplo Hakadosh Baruch Hu lechol Eretz Yisrael v'nicha taiches Yaakov Avinu. We saw a similar description of how Yaakov got from Haran to the site of the Beis HaMikdash with the land folding in. Here too, the land, so to speak, from one extreme of Eretz Yisrael to the other extreme, those two points that are at quite a distance from one another, those two points came together as a function of the whole land of Israel became folded up under the spot that Yaakov Avinu was sleeping. And this is symbolic. Shetehei nocha lichavesh levanov. This is symbolic of just like it's easy to capture the small spot of ground that one sleeps on, so too the whole land of Israel will likely be something easy to capture. And that, of course, is later in time, in the time of Yehoshua, when he entered Eretz Yisrael with the Jewish people. We continue. Vayomer shalcheni ki olah hashachar. The angel that was struggling with Yaakov cries out, "Let me go, send me, because now is morning." Omar lo, Yaakov turns to the individual that he was fighting with and asks, "Ganavato, kavustisato, shemisyore min hashachar? Are you a thief or a kidnapper? Someone who is afraid of the light?" In other words, these are people that move in the stealth of darkness. And is your plea to be left because it's light an indication that you are someone like this, a thief or a kidnapper? Omar lo, so the angel now reveals his true identity and says, "Maloch ani, I am an angel. And from the time I was created till now, there hasn't been an opportunity, the time for my reciting Shira has not arrived till now." In other words, that now is the key moment, the moment for which my entire existence is dependent. Send me, so I can now say Shira. Mesailer Reb Hananel, Omar Rav, this supports Reb Hananel's teaching that he said in the name of Rav, the Omar Reb Hananel Omar Rav, Shalosh Kitos Shel Malchus Shoris Omar Shira B'chol Yom. There are three groups of Malochim that say Shira, that say praise of the Almighty each day. And Rashi adds, Shalosh Kitos, he says, Chadoshim, Miyom El Yom. Three new groups appear every day. In other words, an angel has one opportunity to recite this praise. And hence, for every day, a new group appears. Achas Omer is Kadosh. One group says Kadosh. The Achas Omer is Kadosh. The Achas Omeres Kadosh Hashem Tzivokos. If you read these three groups, the comments of each group, and you read it together, you come out with the familiar sentence of Kadosh, Kadosh, Kadosh Hashem Tzivokos. The Gemara now raises a question, and the question is based on what we'll see in this Tanaic source that takes us, you could see in the frame and in our Gemara markings, as you know well, we frame Tanaic sources as they appear. The gist of this question is that Malochei Hashores are considered in the following sense lesser than Klal Yisrael, insofar as the Malochei Hashores recite the name of the Almighty only after they've recited three words. After the recitation of three words, then a malach can say the name of the Almighty. In other words, there's a certain amount of awe that one is supposed to have when approaching the recitation of the name of the Almighty. One doesn't just blurt it out, but has to introduce the citation, the speaking of his name with some type of introduction. So when it comes to Malachim, they need a longer introduction. When it comes to Klal Yisrael, they say the name of Hashem after two words, as is illustrated in the Pasuk, Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad. We see the name of Hashem after the words, two words only, Shema Yisrael. After accepting that point, one then looks at what we just said in the Gemara. We just noted that the third group of Malachim say the Shem Hashem after saying Kadosh Hashem Tzevokos. After one word, they're already saying the Shem Hashem. That doesn't conform to the teaching that we will see in this Brisa. As a result of that, the Gemara after this Tanaic source will then offer a revised version of what the Malachim say. Continuing now in the Gemara, Meisvei, we raise an objection. Chaviven Yisrael lifnei HaKadosh Baruch Hu yosir mimalachei ha-shores. The Jewish people are more beloved to the Almighty than the surface angels. She Yisrael omrim shira b'chol sha'a. Jews have a right to say shira at any given time, at all times. Umalachei ha-shores enom shira elopam achas b'yom. Now we have a list of versions of when they say Shira, but we'll see very shortly, it's more limited and conceivably much more limited. So in the meantime, we have said that Jews can say Shira at all times, B'chol Shah. Malachei Hasharis cannot say Shira at all times. One version is Pam Achas Bayom, once a day. V'amri lo Pam Achas B'Shabbos, once a week. V'amri lo Pam Achas B'Chodesh, once a month. V'amri lo Pam Achas B'Shona, once a year. V'amri lo Pam Achas B'Shavua, once every 7 years. V'amri lo Pam Achas B'Yovel, once every 50 years. V'amri lo, and finally, one version is Pam Achas B'Oilam, once forever. This is similar to what we alluded to before in describing the Malach that was struggling with Yankov Avinu, and he said, my time has come. And in other words, we saw in the Gemara above where it said that from the time I was created till now, the time has come. That would seem to fit in with this last version, that only that once forever do they have a right to say Shira. And at the same time, we see Jews have a right to say Shira at all times. Furthermore, Yisrael maskir nes Hashem achar shtei tevos. Jews have the right to say the name of Hashem after two words. Shenemar shma Yisrael Hashem v'chulei. U'malachei ha-shores ein maskirin es Hashem elo achar gimel tevos. The service angels say the name of the Almighty, but only after three words have been said. Kirichtiv kadosh 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 Hashem tzivokos. You notice with our markings we have a dashed underline under the expression Elo Achar Gimel Tevos. We also have an arrow to the immediate right hand side of the Gemara, drawing your attention to the previous arrow where we had presented a version of the Malachim saying the third group saying Kadosh Hashem Tzivokos, where the Shem Hashem appeared in that case only after one word. From this Brisa we see that's not the case. The Brisa continues, V'ein malachei ha-shores oimrim shira l'malo ad shiyomer Yisrael l'mato. The malachei ha-shores don't open up in shira, in praise, until the Jews start here in this world. Shenemar bran yachad koich ve'boker v'hodar v'yoriu kol b'nei elokim. That first, the Jews below, koich ve'boker is Rashi says, Yisrael ha-mishulim l'kechavim, Jews that are compared to the stars, they say their Shira, and then the B'nai Elohim, a reference to the angels, break out with their Shira. All that having been said, we have a question on hand. Above, it was said that the third group of angels says, Kodosh Hashem Tzvokos. In this source, we see that they cannot say the Shem Hashem until they've recited three words prior. Hence, the Gemara revises. Elo, achas omeres kadosh. One group of malachim says kadosh. The achas omeres kadosh, kadosh. And the second group says the word kadosh twice. The achas omeres kadosh, 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 Hashem tzivokos. And the third group says this pasuk, indicating that, in effect, this is the first group of the three that's going to be saying the Shem Hashem, and they're saying it only after three words. The Gemara asks, "Vo'ika Boruch, is there not a recitation on the part of the angels of the Pasuk Boruch Kevoid Hashem?" And in that pasuk, if you see Baruch Kavod, two words, and then Hashem, then the name of the Almighty. So after two words, they say the name. The Gemara answers at the top of Tzadi Beis Amid Aleph, Baruch Oifanim Hu Di Amri La. Oifanim is a different heavenly force. It's different than the Malachi Hashores. So the Oifanim, which are can be described as a higher holy force than the Malachi Hashores, they have a right to say the Shem Hashem after two words. The Iboyesema, another approach is that even the angels can say it after two words, but that's Kivon de Isyohiv Rishusa Isyohiv. Once permission has been given to say the Shem Hashem, so they, after they have achieved this permission, in other words, after they have said the Shem Hashem after the three words, then they have a right to say it even after two words. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.